Right behind you, Mr. Mike Singletary, who is...
he looks like...
I thought I'd be a lot more intimidated.
Just hop right onto the field.
I was so afraid of him growing up. Flip those around the other way.
Yeah, coach, the other way there.
There you go. I was so scared of you growing up. You're not nearly as intimidating in a suit as you are in your uniform back when you were playing it. For the Bears, Baylor Bears, or the Chicago Bears, for that matter. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about so?
I'm good. Did you just get in?
Just got in.
Okay. I'm Justin. This is Pat. We appreciate you being on.
Pleasure.
All of Little Rock, at least 12, 15 people max are listening. So, well, welcome to Little Rock. I'm assuming you've been here before.
Yes, I have.
As a Baylor Bear, did you ever play in Little Rock?
Unfortunately, yes.
Didn't go well.
A couple of times it did, and a couple of times it didn't.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. Yeah.
Is there anything you remember particularly from those times here in Little Rock playing?
Well, I just know that my freshman year at Baylor, we came here, I think, and it was a very difficult time. I mean, you guys had a great team here, and it was just a very humbling experience for Baylor at that time, but it got a little better over the years.
Who at that time was your chief rival?
A&M was always the number one rival, and... I guess then SMU kind of picked up a little later with Dickerson and James, and so that was the start of it.
Can you imagine a guy with a defensive mind like him, and now you look at Baylor, and they're almost known for putting up 50 to 60 points a game.
Things have changed.
They've changed big time.
Oh, they've changed everywhere.
But the program's in good shape. You got to feel good about that.
Yes, absolutely.
Have you spent any time on campus? You're not too far away from there, right?
Went to the first game.
Okay.
My daughter's a freshman there. So
cool.
My wife and I went to the first game, and our kids, and we had a great time.
Okay. Can I get a head count on this? Because I was talking about this to the guys of the day. One of the things that I watched your great Bear teams growing up, that was kind of my first. I was only like 11, not to date you. But, you know, watching that Bear team, and Pat grew up in New England, so he was a Patriots fan. You broke his
– one of my first memories.
Broke his heart. Mine too. That was kind of our first real serious foray in NFL football, was that dominating Super Bowl victory in that whole season, which was
not to make you feel old.
A great run. But
I don't even think about it.
What was the helmet count that you broke at Baylor? Because they always reference that.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It's about anywhere from 9 to 12.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay. I would say 13, so I'm going to go with that because it sounds better.
Okay.
I'm curious about the samurai nickname and how that came to be.
You know, guys, just after I was at practice for maybe one of the training camps or whatever, and the guys started teasing me about the amount of noise that I made and the energy that I exerted. And so this guy just won't stop, he just won't quit. And I think that's where the name came from. He never dies.
You were on a group with some real characters, and we've actually had Jim McMahon on the show before. He was at a golf tournament playing barefoot. Dan Hampton was on with us last year with his big gnarly hands. What a collection of strange individuals that came together to dominate the NFL for a season. Do you think about it now? I mean, you've been through some different situations. Guys are a little more businesslike, a little more buttoned up now. That is such a crazy cast of characters you played with.
You know what? It's one of those things I try to tell our kids, whatever happens, you know, when you're going through something in a particular time in life, enjoy it, embrace it, because later on you look back and you go, wow, I had no idea what I was really a part of. But it was a great group. I was just in Chicago this past weekend and had a chance to see a lot of the old guys, and it was just fantastic.
Who managed those personalities? Was it you guys in the locker room? Coach, you had a very powerful head coach, too, at the time, his personality. How did you deal with all that?
Well, it was a unique situation. You know, first of all, you're right. We had Coach Ditka, who was very strong and dominated the team, And of course, you had Buddy Ryan, who was passive-aggressive on the other side that dominated the guys.
With the offensive coordinator, he was passive-aggressive, usually.
So it was it was very interesting. And I think we just kind of policed ourselves. You know, guys like Dan Hampton and Steve McMichael and Richard Dent and Gary Fensick, you know, all those guys, Otis Wilson. You know, we just kind of came together and said, hey, this is how we're going to do it, and let's go.
Did you guys have fun that season, or was there a lot of pressure on you guys to close it out?
We had so much fun. going through it, you know, the pressure really did not come until after we made the Super Bowl Shuffle song. That was about the dumbest thing we ever did.
Yeah.
And the smartest thing at the same time.
There you go. You know what's interesting? I was telling the guys on the morning show today, when I was in sixth grade, that was our talent show thing. We won the middle school talent show. I was Fensick, and I can still do the Fensick rap to this day. Do you remember your part in the Super Bowl Shuffle?
No. Yes,
we don't?
Yes or no?
Yes, yes, I remember. No, I'm not doing it, so don't ask me.
How long did you have to practice it before you got the routine down?
It looked like at least 15, just 20 minutes.
Just a couple of times.
And whose idea was it?
You know what? Willie Gault knew a guy that was a director or something like that of a record company that approached Willie and really got the team to do it simply because he talked about how much it would help the poor community if we did it and knew that he would get a lot of guys by doing that. And so that's really how it happened.
He's as smooth as a chocolate swirl. He dances a little funky, so watch him, girl. There's no one there that doesn't like him.
Coach, tell him to stop, Coach.
I'm sorry.
Coach, do something.
I remember it too well. I'm telling you, it's really disappointing. I'm actually, I wish I could cleanse it from my brain. I'm sure you do too, but it can't get out. It can't get out.
I wanted to ask you about your time coaching and looking back on that, what you learned that maybe you hadn't previously thought going into being a head coach.
Well, I think first and foremost, just the amount of media and dealing with the media so constantly. You know, it's very difficult sometimes to be politically correct all the time.
Telling us, yeah.
And I think, you know, Coach Dick and I have had a number of conversations, and he said, you know, I couldn't coach today. I mean, it would be difficult, and you know, you're a lot like me. But I think it's one of those things where you really look back at it, and of course there's some things that I would change. Coaches, you know, dealing with the media, you just have to do some things in a certain way and move on.
Mm-hmm. Mike Singletary joining us in the zone if you're just tuning in.
I was going to say, any thoughts now going back at all, or are you feeling good where you're at now?
Oh,
going
absolutely.
Back to
coaching. I will definitely be coaching again after this
season. Oh, okay.
Absolutely. Yes.
Can you tell us about any prospects?
No.
Head coaches?
No.
A coordinator? No.
Head coach. Could you,
head coach. Okay.
Yes.
Can you tell me about the 46 zone and what was the key to that? You had to have a spectacular middle linebacker to run that defense, right? Is that the key to that whole deal?
It is. Having a middle linebacker, really, it's having the three guys in the middle. When you have Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael, and Richard Dent on the outside, and then depending on who you put, the other guy you put in the middle, you know, Fridge or Michael, those three guys in the middle really make the defense work. If those guys can play, and if they're disciplined, which Dan was, and they're disruptive.
On the field, at least.
Yeah.
He was a wild man, but he was on the field.
But I had no idea. I thought, in all honesty, I thought you really did. I was a big key to that defense. But until I really begin to break it down and look at it and study it, and I continue to study it to this day, those three guys are the key.
You are working with the NFL now?
Yes.
What exactly is your title?
My title is I am a consultant to the NFL, basically Troy Vincent. Helping him make some of the decisions that he needs to make.
Okay. Well, and you knew this question was probably going to come. The whole Ray Rice thing sort of blew up yesterday, and it's been a topic of conversation for some time. He is certainly not the first player that's been involved in a domestic abuse situation.
And won't be the last.
That's exactly right. And it kind of hit the fan yesterday. The NFL, in my opinion, and I want to get your thoughts on it, is sort of in a tough situation. They had the penalty, then they came back and said, we don't feel it's strong enough, we're changing the policy. Now the policy is six games. From my perspective, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a PR specialist, but it would seem to me that from the NFLPA standpoint, it's going to be hard to enforce more than a six-game ban for this guy who has never had, to my knowledge, another incident. So can you talk to me about, I guess, the quandary to some degree that the NFL is in?
I don't see that it's very difficult.
Okay.
I really don't. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's a tough thing to do, but I think it's the right thing to do.
What do you think ultimately will end up being his ban? Do you think it'll be more than six games, at six games? Any idea?
I have no idea. I think what it really comes down to is I just think that as the NFL makes this decision, I realize that there are so many other things that they have to consider. And, you know, it's a very carefully thought out decision that they have to make. And but I think whatever it comes down to, it'll be fair for all involved. I just think that because of the nature of what we do, and we're in the spotlight as players, as coaches, what have you, you're going to be held to a higher standard. And you got to accept that because it is a privilege to play in the National Football League. It really is.
Mm-hmm. From the other standpoint, players and coaches, other than, you know, take away the administrators, how do you handle that within the locker room from the players' coach's side if that happens to one of your teammates, if he's going through that?
Well, I think as a teammate of someone like that, you just continue to support them, depending on, you know, what it was that happened or what have you. The significance of it, I'm sure the guy is feeling awful about it. I'm sure his wife is feeling awful about it. And I think it's just one of those things. I can't imagine what his mom is thinking about. I can't imagine what his sister and brother. You know, it's one of those things that is just very unfortunate all the way around.
Mike, this is Cowboy Country, and back to football now. We can talk about some on-the-field stuff. Cowboy fans are still scratching their heads. It's always a topic of conversation, partially because Jerry Jones has connections to the state, partially because it's the proximity to Dallas. But are they going to figure it out, do you think? And if so, if you were running over there, if you were in charge of things in Dallas, what kinds of things do you see that you think, if they're going to be a championship team, they've got to do what?
Well, you know what? It's always so much easier to talk about something from a distance. And I think, you know, having had the opportunity to be a head coach before and being able to make some decisions and not have those decisions go the way you thought they were going to go is very difficult. I just think that for the Cowboys, it's just a matter of coming to that place of everybody being on the same page and doing the jobs that they know that they can do. Mm-hmm. They've got some talent.
Give a perfect situation in mind, or what would be? What are some things that from that first go round when you were in San Francisco to today that maybe you would, if you're sitting in front of a general manager or an owner, you say, okay, if you want me to coach your team, here are some things that I've learned in the past that I need now that maybe you didn't have before.
Well, I think it starts with the GM. It really does. Mm-hmm. And having a tremendous relationship with the GM. And you have to have somebody that you trust and you guys are on the same page, you're on the same, the values are the same. And then you, if you have that right, then everything else pretty much goes along with that, the mm-hmm. flow. And then it's having a great coaching staff, the best coaching staff that you can possibly have. And, of course, you have to agree on the having the right personnel. Not just going to get players that can play, but getting players that can play what you want them to play.
Right.
And so I think those three things in that order.
How much would you insist on having input into players in the draft, and how much do head coaches typically have?
Every organization is different. And I think for, you know, every head coach, it just comes down to the way the organization looks at things, from the very owner to the GM to the head coach to everybody else. And I think there has to be a chain of command. And so
identify roles and do it. One other question. You brought up the media. What can you tell us, knuckleheads on this side, what are some ways to deal with coaches when, you know, whether it's post-game, pre-game, or other conference things that you could say, hey, guys, we don't like these kinds of things, but here's a way to ask certain questions that we get the answer you want.
Once again, it's different in every city. I think having the opportunity to do it again, it would be sitting down with the media. You know, I think right now the media and the coaching staff are at odds. In every city, mm-hmm. you know, the media has got to get everything out of them they can. Why was that? That was a stupid idea. What were you thinking about? Why did so? And then the coaches are on the other side trying to hide everything. So I think it would be great for the media and the coaching staff to sit down and, you know, just in a room and say, hey, you know what? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about we need to be on the same team. And we need to figure out, I need you not to do this. Mm-hmm. If you want me to really help you and not give you interviews where I'm saying, yep, No. if you want to really get some information that we can give you, and trust me that this is all I can give you,
yeah,
then we need to be on the same page.
That's good. Communication is always the key, whether it's within
an organization. So how are we doing so far, Coach? How are we doing so far?
You're doing great.
Well, it's because we haven't had to cover you every day while you're the head coach.
Thank you.
I'm with you. I mean, my deal has always been, here's my approach. We'll ask tough questions occasionally, but I try never to ask anything that's out of bounds. And there's a level of respect that I have for coaches that I think some media guys don't have. My thing is, it's hard work. The scrutiny's tough. Dealing with all the players, dealing with all the personnel, it's a hard thing, and not only people realize that. So I have a respect for coaches and players and what they go through. And I think as long as you convey that, generally speaking, I've never really had any issues.
Right.
So I don't know that you guys always get that, though. That's unfortunate.
Well, you know, it's once again, it's everybody's got agendas, and I think sometimes you have guys in the media that are trying to get another job.
Yeah, or they want to tell their story. They don't want to tell the story.
Bingo.
Right.
And so that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Having a win-win situation every time we get together. Setting the boundaries and knowing what those are, and then following them.
Yeah.
Did you ever score a touchdown in the NFL?
And
the
reason NFL.
Reason I think that you brought up the fridge, and in that Super Bowl win, the fridge ran for a touchdown, and Walter Payton never scored a touchdown.
He was the
game.
Only one who didn't score against the Patriots in that game.
Yeah, right. You guys were giving. At the time, no one thought about that whole dynamic.
There was a big hubbub about that.
Was that after the game?
After the game.
You guys never even.
I never really thought about it. Could care less about it.
Yeah.
In all honesty. But at the end of the day, I'm sure after you think about it, I'm sure Walter would have wanted to score.
Mm-hmm.
But. It happened.
Before we let you go, can you tell me a little bit about being his teammate? Because he's a guy that is still, to this day, renowned as one of the great gentlemen in the game. And I know people that have come in contact with him just talk glowingly about him still to this day. They've got an award named his honor. I mean, he's a unique one, and one that, will be remembered forever for his greatness on and off the field.
Well, he was definitely a mentor. He was definitely one of those guys that was just you wanted to be his teammate. And he would sit down and talk with you about things, whether it be business, whether it be family, whatever it might be. But a class guy and a fun guy. Never down, a fun guy.
Mm-hmm.
Too fun for me. And but it was just one of those things where you'll always remember being with a guy like him because of what he did and who he was and how he did it.
He seemed to be a great counterpart for you on the other side of the ball because you both played with toughness and a reckless abandon. And I remember watching him run. I was just like, this guy so relentless.
Yeah.
It's great to watch. But
absolutely.
Who
anyway.
Did you enjoy terrorizing the most? Which opponent? You just enjoyed chasing him down and sticking his head in the mud.
I never did that. I never did that. I always, in all honesty, I just really enjoyed playing the game. But all the other stuff, intimidating, and I never tried to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I just love playing the game.
You look like you could still suit up. Do you have any other than creaks that you get from being a longtime player? You have anything that's affected you physically since?
I'm very blessed. I don't really have any this or that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you have some things, but nothing to complain about.
That's great.
That's great. Yeah, it
well,
is
good.
Good.
Can't say that for everybody you hit over the years. Mike is really
me too.
A pleasure meeting you. We look forward to listening to you on the podium today as well. Thanks so much for giving us some
time.
Thank
you.
Coach,
right,
take care.
Excited to see you, Coach, next year.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Take care. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We're going to take